do all you can to listen and give people the opportunity to share.
Welcome to Improv is No Joke podcast, where it's all about becoming a more effective communicator by embracing the principles of improvisation. I'm your host, Peter Margaritis, the self-proclaimed chief edutainment officer of my business, The Accidental Accountant. My goal is to provide you with thought-provoking interviews with business leaders so you can become an effective improviser, which will lead to building stronger relationships with clients, customers, colleagues, and even your family. So let's start the show. Welcome to episode 41 of Improv is No Joke podcast. Thank you very much for downloading this episode. Today's guest is John Kelly, who is the Chief People Officer at White Castle Systems, Inc. John was also one of the first to get an early read on my book, and he gave me a wonderful testimonial. Thanks, John. John and I have a conversation around the topic of change management. But first, we discuss the strong culture of the organization as demonstrated by the low turnover in the restaurants and extremely low turnover in their home office. I witnessed this firsthand at the General Managers Leadership Conference in February. I was the closing keynote speaker, but I attended the entire conference. They kicked off the conference by asking for everyone to stand if they've been with the organization for 5 years or more. All 700 plus stood. Then they said, for 10 years or more, a few sat down. 15 years or more, a few more sat down. 20 years or more than half the room was still standing, which is incredible for any restaurant chain. On the topic of change management, we discussed the issues involved in building a new corporate office that will last for about 60 plus years. The current headquarters have served them well, but they are outgrowing it, and actually have been outgrowing it, as John describes. He says that you can walk the halls of White Castle Systems and see the different eras in the building as they've expanded it over the years. But now they need a new building. He describes the process of taking the history and culture of White Castle and transforming it into something that's modern and sustainable. It's an interesting conversation from blending the generations to security issues to consider. I'm sure you'll enjoy our conversation. In the interview, you will hear the implied principles of improvisation, respect, trust, support, listen, and focus, which are necessary along with the glue of yes and, so that you can adapt to a changing landscape and be successful. I'm sure you'll enjoy our conversation. If you've been listening to my podcast for a while, you know that one of my goals with this podcast is to help you begin to make changes in your work and personal lives so you can better connect with others and create meaningful relationships. Many people have said that it takes 21 days to start a habit, which I recently learned from Dr. John B. Molitor, PhD, which is incorrect. John is the Dean of Psychiatry and Community at Michigan State University. He said that research shows that it takes 66 days to create a habit. So now we've got to put in the extra work to create that muscle memory. That's why I created the Yes And Challenge to help keep these principles in front of you so you can build up your improvisational muscle. To sign up, please go to my website, petermargaritis.com, and scroll down to the Yes And Challenge call to action and click to register to begin building the productive habit of Yes and the principles of improvisation. And remember to share your experiences on Twitter using the hashtag YesAndChallenge. If you're unaware of what the Yes And Challenge is all about, I discuss this in detail in episode 0, so go back and take a listen. Remember, you can subscribe to my podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play. If you'd like to purchase a personalized signed copy of my book, Improv is No Joke, Using Improvisation to Create Positive Results in Leadership and Life, for $14.99 and the shipping's free, please go to my website and you'll see the graphic on my homepage. Now, please allow 14 days for shipping. With that said, let's get to the interview with John Kelly. Hey, everybody. I'm with John Kelly today, who is the Chief People Officer for one of my favorite companies in the whole U.S. of A, White Castle Systems Incorporated. John, thank you for taking time to spend with me as a guest on my podcast today.
Yeah, sure. Thank you. Thanks for the invitation.
I've been so looking forward to this. I always enjoy our conversations. And just so the audience knows that prior to starting this, we've already had a 35, 36 minute conversation even before we started recording. So and what we're going to talk about today, the conversation we're going to have today is going to be somewhere around the lines of change management and different aspects of that. But before we get into the conversation, John, who is, as a side note, most of my audience, if they know me, they know that I'm a connoisseur of the Kentucky Brown Water, aka bourbon. And I pride myself on my Maker's Mark bottle collection and usually my bourbon collection. Well, I've met the person who has blown my doors off as it relates to the collection of bourbon. This man has more unique bottles of bourbon in his cabinet and his house than I could ever imagine. If I brought a few of my friends up here from Kentucky, they would be in over that. So, John, give us a little bit of, tell everybody a little bit about your background.
Okay. Thanks for that. thanks for the acknowledgement of the collection too. I've been curating it for a while. So, and you were the one that basically turned me on to it. So.
Oh, well, you're welcome.
Yeah. So, real quick, just to kind of go back through, I actually went to college I was an elementary teacher for about a year and a half before I started working at White Castle. They lured me in something we were trying at the time, which was international franchising. So we did try, and we don't franchise in the United States, but we have tried internationally. And when I started, we had stores in Korea during my time in international. We opened up Mexico, which are both those countries are all, everything's closed outside of the United States now, but we were trying it back in the 90s. Mm-hmm. At some point then I moved. It gave me an opportunity to learn a lot of different things about the company, especially operations. And then I jumped into HR and training. With my education background, I think several people thought, you know, what better? And we had not had a centralized training function. So we were kind of building everything from scratch, even though we were, you know, into our 75th anniversary. So slowly over that time, since mid-1990s, I'm part of the family. So my great-grandfather started the company. I serve at the company reporting to my cousin, who's our CEO and president, brother-in-law who works here, two sisters, some other cousins. All of us have a great time working together at our family-owned company. So it's been really interesting reporting to my cousin because we see, you know, sometimes we see eye to eye on things. Sometimes we don't. We have good conversations behind closed doors, but we always present a united front and have been working to try and, I would say, give some new meaning to some of our values. We obviously have had a very strong culture. We've got very low turnover in our restaurants. We've got about 10,000 total people in the system. We're right around 100% turnover, which is low for the industry when we look at everything in the restaurants. In the home office, we've got exceptionally low turnover. But just trying to give new meaning to some of our values and guiding principles. They haven't changed a lot, but just give some new meaning to them from, you know, from the 80s to 2015, 16, 17. It'll be our 100th anniversary in 2021.
That's cool. So, just side note. So, it is a family-owned business. It's been around since what year was this?
1921.
You're going to be 100. Well, I could have done the math in 2021. Yes, I'm the accidental accountant. But working in a family-owned business just in itself presents a lot of different challenges than it would in a publicly held or a privately held business that's not family-owned.
Yeah, it does. It's on one hand, it's I would say like a lot of things I'll say today, it's maybe kind of a double-edged sword. You know, I know there's people out there who have my back. I know that, you know, I can have a conversation with them, but sometimes you have to have difficult conversations with a family member and then realize, you know, we're all going to be at our family meeting in June and everybody's going to be there, or we've got a cousin's lunch that's coming up. So Lisa and I don't see eye to eye, or Jamie and I don't see eye to eye on something. You know, you can't take it personally. And we really spend a lot of time trying to divide. And as a family, really work to make sure that the family survives, despite whatever happens at the company. Our identity is as a family that owns a business. So we don't make business decisions based on family, but we want to make sure that we're a family first.
That's great. And because a lot of family businesses start out with all the great intentions, but stuff gets in the way, or they get themselves in the way, and feelings can hurt family members. And next thing you know, somebody's buying out somebody else, or the business is absolutely dissolved because the family can't get along.
Right. We're in fourth generation. The other three generations transitioned pretty well. We just went through a transition from Bill Ingram, my uncle, Lisa's father, to Lisa. And that was about, for our generation, we had been working on that for about 10 years, where I'm the oldest of my branch, Lisa's the oldest of her branch, and there's another guy named Dave who's the oldest of his branch of the family. And we had all at one point expressed interest that, yes, we might like to be considered to be president and or CEO when the time came. And then we worked with a family business advisor to first come up with the process that we would go through. And then, you know, then present a united front.
Okay.
To the rest of the family, to the board, to everybody else to make sure. And it was, again, around keeping the family together.
And which goes to the essence of the brand itself, which goes to the essence of the longevity of the company. I've always known of White Castle, but it wasn't until we met some years ago that I learned about White Castle Systems, the inside of it, and the family business, and the challenges that you guys run into and stuff. And as you say that you're about to turn 100 years old, you've been in the same location for...
We've been in the building we're in. We moved here in Columbus 1934. Yeah, so we've been in a building that has been modified. You can walk through the building and see which era the construction was done on the second floor, whether it's nice mahogany paneling up front or 70s paneling in the middle or wallpaper in the back. So it's we have done a lot. We've got one woman who sits in an old vault that has been the door has been disabled, but just trying to squeeze people in about anywhere. And we're all excited about trying to build a new building. But with that comes, as you were talking a little bit about change management, you know, we've got people from, we don't have any silent generation, but we've got a significant number of boomers, Gen X, some millennials, a couple maybe just starting in as some of the, even the younger millennials and the Gen Zs and stuff. You know, we're looking at and building a building that's going to last us for another 50 or 60 years, we'd like, and really trying to figure out what kind of environment that's going to be, because everybody kind of has a different version of what would be best for them and how we want our values of, you know, accountability and customer focus and responsiveness and healthy and energetic to come alive in that. Lisa and I really feel that redefining of some of our values, moving into this building, we've got a lot of riding on how much this is going to help us advance the culture that we want to shift to from a dynamic standpoint.
So I do want to touch on that, but I also want to say that when I'm out and about talking to people, I always talk about this friend of mine who's the chief people officer at White Castle, and the response I get a vast majority of the time is, I love his title, Chief People Officer versus Vice President of Human Resources. And some of us who remember these Saturday Night Live, Gilda Radner, did you say Human Resources? No, that's yes. Human Resources. That because, and as the business that you're in the people business. Without people, White Castle doesn't exist. Customers we don't have them. And I love the fact that you were the chief people officer, because you're trying to manage a mass amount of people within your organization and guide them in a direction that the company's going. And as you're talking about building this new building, and you said we're trying to meet it because we've got, you know, maybe 3 to 4 generations who will be in this, from the boomers to the millennials to, some are calling them like Gen Z, some are calling them Gen Wi-Fi.
You're right.
Because they've never, they don't know who the Dewey Decimal System is. they may have seen the box if their father has it in his tool in the garage where he keeps his nuts and bolts and screws and stuff, but didn't realize that's how we used to research stuff. But you may say, everybody's trying to figure out how it fits in for them, but should that conversation actually be what's best, not for me, but what's best for the company and the culture as we move forward?
Definitely. And that's what we've been studying a lot of other buildings. I just got back from a tour of a couple other headquarters in the industry, and they're, I got learned a lot from them because they did talk about, what's best for the culture that we want, what's best for the brand as a whole. And to us, it's interesting that you bring up, because I specifically chose that title when I was promoted to this level. The idea was, we chief HR, you chief this. We don't have HR per se. We call our HR department team member services. And I chose that title as well because collectively our vision, our mission is to create memorable moments for our customers every day. And we talk a lot about that here in our home office as being our customers are the team members. So we're trying to work to create, memorable moments and make sure they're happy. They can only give service and create great memorable moments to the level that which they've experienced them themselves. So there is a little bit of a tension there, but I think it's a good tension of the looking at every team member in our home office as a customer and what do they really want, and then also being able to define here's what may not be exactly what you think you want, but this is what we know you will want at some point. And figuring out, because it is bigger, because, somebody who's only got 10 more years out of that 50 or less, there's going to be other people here, ideally, who are here for another 30 or 40 out of that time frame. So, and we're also building it, obviously, to be a lot more flexible than this thing we moved into over 80 years ago, so, which was an old tire plant before we had it. So.
Oh, really?
Yeah. My grandfather talked about his first job here was scraping rubber off of the windows because it was so nasty.
Oh, wow. My first introduction to White Castle Systems, which just reminded me, was many years ago on the 4th of July, sitting in the parking lot watching the fireworks in downtown Columbus.
Mm.
Because it was a great view vantage point at that point in time. And
those early red, white, and boom things. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm like, where are we going? And so, well, this is where White Castle. I said, oh, the great little sliders. They go, yeah, this is their headquarters. So it's here in Columbus. I was like a wide eyed, bushy tailed kid that I was on in my mind, the hallowed grounds of White Castle. But thinking about over these past 90 plus years going into 100 and you're moving into a new building and being chief people officer, you don't have any gray hair. So, I mean,
I do.
I can imagine.
It doesn't show up as much when I get it cut, but my sisters make reference to it quite frequently.
So. Family owned business. They're not going to let that go back. But I imagine there's a number of challenges that you've got to deal with, because we were talking about this earlier, just even the way the new building's going to be designed versus the traditional way that you're currently in today.
Right. Whether it's the new building where, and because we're in an old building that is not flexible, and there's, somebody probably knows which are the load bearing walls and other things, but a lot of hallways and a lot of doors and a lot of offices. Obviously that does not make for a lot of collaboration, a lot of project teamwork, which not only us, we're trying to move more towards that, as are a lot of companies who are doing it very successfully. But, the newer team members that we're hiring, the millennials, that's how they got through school. That's what the expectation was, that I'm not going to be working on just this kind of thing. I'm going to be working, cross-functionally with people from marketing and purchasing and coming up with new products and contributing in a much bigger way than even I was when I started. So yeah, it's trying to find that balance of what's going to be comfortable, what's going to be, but what's going to also be usable and foster that collaboration. We've recognized in And I recognized years ago when I was trying to get people to sign up for some charity event in our old building, we have no one place where we can hang something where everybody will see it. You can walk in and out, and there's multiple ways in and out of the building and other things that it's just we can't communicate with everybody. And know that if I hang a sign here in the lobby, everybody's going to see it because we got back doors. Same kind of thing with our overall cultural shifts, because we had gotten to the point where team members got very comfortable, and we always talk about our family atmosphere. We always talk about the meaning of what a family, but you know, the way we would call all of our team members our family. We want to be one big family and a family culture. In a family culture, everybody looks out for everybody else. And what does that mean? And there was there were some expectations that if I had something now, I would always have it into the future. And now as things change, one of our big ones, have recently been talking about is up until January 1st of 2017, we had an open, unfrozen pension plan. We just froze that pension plan. So we've been talking about it for a couple years, and we had a pension plan and a profit sharing plan. Last year, we opened up a 401k, but we just are now getting a 401k because we've been trying to nurse this pension, and it's getting so incredibly difficult. That in and of itself is another huge cultural shift of, you know, company taking care of you to kind of some personal responsibility, and the company will participate in that. But it was an exceptionally difficult decision to make for us. But they're just, it's an old plan and an old style.
Exactly. Once it kind of surprises me that you guys just now are getting rid of the defined pension plan and moving to a contribution plan, the 401k, but you're a family-owned business, you've got team members, you've got a lot of people who you get very low turnover, so you've got a lot of people who are highly vested into this pension plan, and that is a real cultural shift of the company taking care of you versus we're going to help contribute, but it's more you're more accountable for your managing your retirement, and I'll just say from a lot of people who are non CPAs, non accountants, numbers they're afraid of.
Oh yeah.
A lot of times it's a lack of, there's fear, but it's also a lack of understanding, but it's also a lack of, I don't want to ask a question because I don't want to sound like I'm stupid, but really the message is you're not, you just need to ask more questions.
Right.
And have somebody there to say that this is how it works. And let me teach this to you versus I can't believe you don't know this.
What I've encountered being the leader of benefits, I love it when I go out because I've talked to many financial planners of our team members here locally who have gone out and worked, and you know they say so you know Vicky and Ben and benefits, and I say oh yeah, she is awesome about answering all the questions. She's a defined benefit expert like that. And it really is. We desperately want everybody to understand it and try and do a lot of things that people do. But like a lot of things, you know, it was interesting. There was an interesting piece to this and how many thank yous I got when we talked about opening up the 401k, because some of the younger people hadn't looked at it. They really thought I'm missing out because everybody else in my circle of friends or family are saving for their retirement, and I don't have this thing that called a 401k. But they didn't understand really what the pension was, which was companies just going to give you money when you retire. But it also falls into that, well, my gosh, I'm 22. I got not retire until I'm in my 60s. I don't need to understand all those things. I got, you know, the more normal day-to-day stuff. So it is, and add to that, that our two largest facilities where the biggest groups of people are is our home office with about 200 people, and our largest food processing plant that makes our grocery store sliders. Our largest one of those has 200. Otherwise, they're dispersed in little castles with 20 to 40 people in them, depending on the sales. So 10,000 people dispersed over 400 locations. It adds a a level of communication challenges.
How many states are you in?
I think we're around 14.
About 14.
We got like one or two in Wisconsin, so we kind of count that. But but right around that, 12 or so.
And but you're more concentrated in the Great Lakes region?
Yes. Well, our largest single region is Chicago with 80. New York and New Jersey together have about 75, I think. And then we're in Michigan, Ohio, Kentucky, Indiana, Illinois, Missouri, Minnesota.
So, because I always wanted you guys to put one in Tennessee, Georgia, northern part of Florida, central Florida, and in Fort Myers, down 75. So when I used to drive to visit my family in Fort Myers, I would have my stopping points, because when I go to Lexington to visit friends, I always stop at the White Castle, especially coming back. That's just north of Kings Island in Lebanon.
Yep.
That's my stopping point to grab about 3 jalapeno burgers and get back on the road.
We do have some in Tennessee. We've looked farther south. I think at some point you'll see something a little farther south, but we're probably going to skip a lot of that, some of those states. A lot of people ask us, actually, if there's rumors about a gentleman's agreement with Crystal. The company is very similar to us. Copied us. They started about 10 or 12 years after we did. There is no gentleman's agreement. We actually, those Tennessee, Nashville, Tennessee, and Lexington are the two places where we both have restaurants and compete. And it's one of the fun things, if you're ever bored, is to watch when a particular piece, you know, maybe goes viral on Twitter or Facebook or anything. The people, if you started out with White Castle, you're generally a loyal White Castle. If you grew up in the South, you're going to try and defend your Crystals a little more. But we love that our Cravers jump right on and love us as much as they do.
Well, being a guy from the South who was introduced to Crystal, I was all in Crystal, and then I met the Slider family, and I'm all in the Castle these days. I haven't had a Crystal burger in 30 plus years, I think.
So, oh, wow.
Something like that.
That's deserving of a Crave Cake race. Coupon for a free Crave Cake. I'll get that to you next time.
Okay, that sounds great. There goes my New Year's resolution about that whole diet thing. But think about this culture and how you've grown and how you've maintained and the challenges that you have, and you're opening this new office, and you were telling me that in this new office, it's going to be more of an open, collaborative type of office.
Yes.
Versus there's no collaboration per se, or the ability to collaborate. So that's going to bring its own challenges in itself.
We're still actually in obviously the early design stages and trying to figure out, you know, how things are going to work in the new building. But we've been talking to team members about, you know, what are they used to working with? What do they like about their workspaces? What do they not like about their workspaces? And then picked a select few. And I think we had 98% of our team members fill that survey out. So we got a lot of really rich data around that. And what pieces do they like about the office, and what are their feelings about it, and brand, and all kinds of things. Then we had some interviews with them as well, that where we were able to start. And I would say, because I sat in on about half of them, and then one of my colleagues sat in on the other half, and we were able to let them. It was more of the qualitative part of a research project, and trying to figure out, you know, okay, so tell me, you know, why do you talked about really needing your doors, and why. How do you use your office that you need your doors? Well, I need it to be closed because I need to do, you know, some heads down work, and I can't be disturbed, and I don't want people coming up and in this open environment. And most of them had never really seen anything like this, because most of their career has been here.
Right.
They see TV pictures of, you know, Facebook, where there's 3 people at a table the size that I'm sitting at, and everybody's like all crunched together. And so we've been able to start talking about, okay, well, imagine your space might not be exactly where it is, but if there's this quiet section, and part of our culture becomes when you see somebody in that room or in this area, they're there. It's quiet. You're not supposed to have your conversations there. Don't go up and tap somebody on the shoulder, because, you know, within this whether it's orange carpet or somehow divided, you're there. And then they start to say, oh, okay, now, you know, they're starting to, some of them are starting to come around. So,
because knowing the current office as you were describing it, and I'm trying to think, what's the one point in that office where you could collaborate amongst many outside of a meeting room or a conference room is your cafeteria.
Yes.
And my just dawned on me. So as you move to a new building, from what I understand, the first floor will actually be a White Castle restaurant. Is that correct?
First floor will be our cafeteria, and it will serve a lot more of our product. We serve a lot of our products now in our cafeteria, but you've seen our cafeteria is in the basement. There's no light. There's people don't like going down there.
Right.
And I think one of our guiding principles, and this was confirmed for me on my recent trip with technology, you know, as you know this, because you travel so much, you can get a lot of work done. You don't have to be in your office. You have your office with you wherever it goes, with your phone and your laptop. What a lot of companies, and we're trying to do this too, a lot of people can do their work anywhere. They can work from home. They can work from other places. Create an environment where people want to come because there's cool amenities. I know I'm going to see my friends there. I know I'm going to have those spontaneous interactions. I know I'm going to have those, you know, those times where I can, you know, and have a cool place to work. It's even cooler than my dining room table or my office at home and things like that.
So the first floor will be the cafeteria, but will it be open for retail customers, or is this going to be for White Castle employees only?
We are working through that. I would like to see it open for other retail customers as well, and figure out how security. That another interesting thing, because we saw two drastically different versions of security on this trip with these two Atlanta-based companies. Right now, as you know, when you come in to visit, there's kind of a room that you're standing in, and you can't get out of that room until somebody comes to get you. In this new environment, it's, you know, we might have those little glass doors. You know, I do think of like locally here when I visited people at Cardinal Health. I mean, there's a person sitting there at a desk, but there's something that's not much higher than that desk that anybody with any amount of strength could get over those things very easily and run. So there's cultural, these change management things at almost every level as people are start to realize that and say, well, you know, how am I going to be protected? You know, although there's not a lot to be protected from around here, there's a condos across the street, but change management at every level. But I would like to see that our cafeteria open to others as well.
I was making sure that, because I love coming down to visit you guys and eating in the cafeteria. Yes, it's dark, but it still serves great product. Security. So I don't know this. When employees come to work at White Castle currently, do you have to wear badges, my friend?
Yes, we do.
Okay.
We have a badge that opens up the doors from the outside. I'm sitting right now in our training center, which is actually a detached building, and it's got its own, the badges as well. So we will still have some version of that, because the badges also, ideally, at some point, they're going to turn into, here's how I can buy a Coke out of the vending machine, here's how I can pay for my charges at our mailroom or in our cafeteria. It's also how from common printers, I can send something to a virtual printer. If I'm sitting here, there's a closer printer. If I do need to have something printed, which is the other, talk about a cultural change for a 95-year-old company to go, we're not trying to go completely paperless, but we're trying to move that digital way. And even my HR department's like, we got to have that paper. We got to have some of that paper. And I'm like, no, we don't have to have as much of it.
Right. I don't think there's such a thing as a paperless office anymore, but I think it's, we've moved to offices that consume less paper.
Yes. Actually, we did an early thing with CBRE and some people from all over. They were from an office. They have one office, which apparently, and I still can't figure out how to do it, you know, from IRS things and tax forms and stuff, they say they are 100% paperless. They have no printers in that building.
What? That's Jetson-y, man.
Yes, it is Jetson. I don't know what everybody's faxes. There's lots of scanners. I'm not sure how they do it, but one of my personal things is I'm trying to figure out, is there a way, I still take paper-based notes and meetings and other things. I have tried to take them on my personal, you know, laptops or other things. Even with Evernote and some of those things, when they get in there, it just never comes back out. And, you know, sometimes I miss things or something. So I went back to paper, and Lisa, my cousin, has done a very good job of going a lot much more paperless. She does not take paper notes. She takes notes on a iPad or computer.
I do both. I have a Moleskin that at times I'll sit and I'll take notes that way. Right now I'm taking some notes just on a piece of paper. But when you said Evernote, I do a lot of taking notes and remembering things and jotting things down, jotting ideas down in the Evernote. And you're right, sometimes I can't find what I know that I've written, that I've put in there. So, which tells me I'm doing a bad job in tagging it. As a change manager, as a culture change, I think one of the challenges that you have is when you go to a paperless environment, so you're in a meeting and you're taking notes on an iPad or a computer, there's something I think in the back of some people's minds going, are they playing solitaire?
Yes. They're surfing the internet.
Are they on AmazonRightNow.com? Are they, you know, reading their email? Are they multitasking? And it's, I think early on when I, in my speaking career, when we were using more paperless stuff and people in the audience were using more tablets and on the phones and stuff, I thought that's in my head that they're multitasking, that they're not anymore. It's such a blend out there that some people will just take notes, but others are actually, you can tell that they're taking notes. I'm assuming they're taking notes on their iPad, their tablet, or their computer, because I don't know, maybe they find it easier that way. So I think there's a blend out there that, you know, it's not wrong. It's just different.
Yes. And it, well, I remember the first time, and I've been in meetings. I serve on a not-for-profit board where somebody wanted to say, it was this juxtaposition of, so the board packet that would come to all of us, it would come to us electronically a little bit ahead of time. And then somebody was saying, well, should I print it out there? Because if I print it out at my place and bring you print it out, then we've got two printouts. And so it was, and then finally somebody said, well, we should, you know, why can't some of us, I do mine electronically. So I'm sitting with an iPad that's open. Somebody said, well, exactly that. Are you reading your email? We said, I think everybody should put all of their electronics away. And so we had ironically, a 15-minute discussion and came to the conclusion that we have to trust that whether you're checking on your email or not, you're at least absorbing. And the other cultural piece that I have learned from one of the, some of this research is my training department is going to be working on something to say, on the other side of that, here's how to have an effective meeting. Because everybody's sitting there checking their email, your meeting's not effective.
Right.
And was your meeting, and the classic, could your meeting have been one of those emails I was checking while you were sitting there talking? So make sure that you've got your meeting planning down, make sure you've got your agendas, make sure people know what to expect, that you start and finish on time, all those kind of general meeting rules. There's another friend of mine who talks about boring meetings suck. His name's John Petz.
Oh, yes. I know,
yeah,
John.
I think you know him. Probably met him. He's local here as well. You know, has some good stuff around that and making sure that your meeting works. That way I can trust that they're listening to me or they're listening to my colleagues, not emailing or Amazon.
Or Amazon or something like that. I as it relates to meetings, I think that the meeting that I dislike the most is the conference call.
Yes.
It's frustrating because, you know, without having an eye-to-eye contact, and then people start talking over people, and then people are quiet, you don't know if they're there, and John has joined the meeting. There's just so many dynamics that I was on a conference call with a client that was the conference call from hell, because it went something like this. So does everybody have my email that I sent out with the latest update to the spreadsheet? What spreadsheet are we talking about? The spreadsheet that I sent out 3 days ago. What was the name of the spreadsheet? Well, I'm not sure that I have it. And then we start the meeting. Like, no, I got the wrong document here. And they literally spent 20 minutes trying to figure out what documents they need to facilitate this meeting. And by that point, the meeting was really done because it was just mass confusion.
People clearly, I know around here a lot and in other places, send the thing out. Whatever we're going to talk about next Monday at our EC meeting, we don't have a hard and fast deadline that has to be out by Thursday. I honestly try because some of my colleagues get on me. I will say this. Some of my colleagues seem to be able to get away with sending something out at 11 o'clock before our 1 o'clock Monday meeting on Monday. But, you know, that's whatever. But, you know, people want to, they'll say they want to be prepared. I need to look at it. I want to look at the numbers in that spreadsheet. But then you can obviously tell in that exactly in that situation, somebody, some of us clearly haven't opened up that spreadsheet yet and looked at it. So that, again, to me, that's all culture. Because I've read about different cultures. I've never actually seen one, but I've been at White Castle for 25 years. But, you know, that if everybody's not prepared for the meeting, then if you're not prepared, you get up and leave, or, you know, the senior most person in that meeting calls it and says, wait a minute, show up prepared. Part of our culture is we're going to have it sent out by Thursday for a Monday meeting. Make sure you've read it by Monday.
Right. Make sure that you've read it by Monday. At least you may not be familiar with it, maybe the detail around it, but just be familiar with the document so we can have a conversation about it. And I see a lot of that, you know, even when you're on a board and you've got a lot of different personalities around the table from a lot of different industries and stuff, and you're having a conversation, has everybody read the documents? And some might say, well, this doesn't pertain to me, and not read it, so they're not able to participate.
Right.
I do want to take a real quick sidestep here because you said you're on a board of a local not-for-profit. So let's give it a good help. Let's give it a good plug. What's the name of the board, the group that you're with?
Actually, I will say there's three. One is I'm stepping down as my tenure as board chair, but I'm still on the board of A Kid Again.
That's the one.
Which is an organization that does we do activities for children and their families with life-threatening illnesses. So any kids get to come. We take thousands of kids to Kings Island. Big thing for that is we've got multiple adventures. We got a chapter in Cincinnati and a chapter in Cleveland, chapter in Columbus. Not only so there's multiple activities throughout the year. So as kids are sick, they're going through the hospital, chemotherapy, whatever, they've got something to look forward to. And the other big piece that we're 20 years old this last year, is that the families and the siblings are involved, because a lot of times kids with siblings and the, you know, somebody's just got cancer or leukemia or something, it's all about getting the kid to school or to the doctor or to the hospital, and the other siblings can bond around that. And it's we've got some resources, so it really helps. So that's ironically not the one that we had that conversation on, but we struggle with it sometimes. But you know, all three are different. So another one I'm on is Godman Guild, which was an old settlement house. It's 117 years celebrating this year. It's over in the near north side over. It's moved around a little bit. And then Ohio Dominican, which is where actually we met when I'm on that board of trustees now.
That's right. Yeah. You and Jamie. I've interviewed Jamie in a previous episode. But yes, John and Jamie were actual MBA students of mine. I don't want to know how many years ago. I think Jamie said it, and I still don't believe it's been over 10 years, or we're butting up on 10 years. But A Kid Again is a great cause. And is it a national foundation group, or is it locally, as a state?
Our home office is here. Largely, we're actually looking at expanding. We just went through some strategic planning. And are in the throes of implementing that, where we're establishing more of a national board and a local board, because everything kind of was all run by Columbus, both chapter and advising the Northern Ohio and the Southern Ohio chapters. And we're actively looking and restructuring to help grow, because our vision on that one is every child in America has a chance to be a kid again. So we know there's lots of sick kids out there that we can help.
Now, think about Kid Again and what you do. Do you work closely with the Ronald McDonald House?
We work closely with I think we do get some referrals there. We are wholly supported by we get a couple grants every once in a while, but by private donations. So we are not a United Way agency. We are we don't get government grants for anything because, you know, a lot of those rightfully so should be, you know, going to cure or find more treatments for leukemia and other kinds of cancers and the challenges that our kids face. So we work with some other agencies, mostly on referrals, to make sure that our children that they may be serving, our families they may be serving, know that this exists. Because this is really all about fun, and our name came from interviewing our parents. Because the other thing that's very difficult, and our leader is a guy named Jeffrey Dameron, and at every one of our story or every one of our meetings, we have a mission moment where he talks about one of our children and one of our families, and you know, all more often than I would like to hear, and I just don't know how he deals with. You know, there was this kid named Gabriel, and Gabriel's no longer with us. And how many funerals that guy of, you know, with little teeny caskets that he goes to, that's got to be tough. But ours is all about having fun. And really, like I said, the name came from our parents because they said, you know, when I was at Kings Island, my kid wasn't the kid in the wheelchair. He was, you know, a kid again. So
what a great way to get a name. And I can't, there's a special place for people like the leader of A Kid Again, because there's a special place in heaven for somebody who can do that, be passionate about it, but also have to see that the other side of it. And I know that my DNA is not made up. I don't think I could ever be that strong to look at that many tiny little caskets out there. So let's begin. We'll start wrapping this up because I don't want to take too much of your busy time, because it is Friday. And if we were in Hawaii, it's Aloha Friday. we call it Buckeye Friday around here. What is the one piece of advice as the chief people officer of White Castle Systems that you would give my audience in dealing in any type of change management situation?
That's a good question. I would say, from a change management standpoint, basically do all you can to listen and give people the opportunity to share, you know, and make sure you're listening, not coming in with your solutions, which is one of my, it is something I have to personally work on, because I come in with a solution sometimes and think, well, I don't understand why you all don't see this is perfect. Because I even did it in some of those one-on-one meetings. Imagine this space over here. You could do this. You can do that. But I would say really, really listening and, to what they want. And I mean, the other funny thing, when I was talking with my cousin Lisa on the way home from this trip, we're not going to make everybody happy.
Right.
Which is another piece of, we desperately want people to like us, especially with us, with that piece of our culture that's family, and we're all part of our extended family. It's listening, starting early. Too many people give this, I would say, give this a short, you know, we can start dealing with that later once we get plans done. Start earlier than that.
Yeah. As I'm hearing the word listen, I'm very sensitive to that word being one of the key pieces of improv. But the other piece that you say is we're not going to be able to please everybody. And I think at the end of the day, as long as you go on this listening tour that you have and this fact-finding tour, and you develop a strategy and a plan and a culture to move forward, knowing that we're not going to please everybody, but the one piece that we have to please is the mission, the vision, and the core competencies of the organization. And as long as we're doing that, it'll all work out. I think it's when we lose sight of that and we're trying to please everybody, but we forget about our mission, vision, and core competencies, I think that's when a bigger issue occurs.
Right, right. And that should be actually where I thought you might go to is the other piece that we've been concentrating on around here, and it ties right in with that, is why. This is the reason why we're going to not have offices. And while a lot of people have asked for them, our values are around, you know, accountability and collaboration, and, you know, that why, and making sure that you hit those. That's really good.
Yeah. And there will be challenges in those early days with this different environment that you're creating, and that'll provide different. There'll be some challenges that you guys haven't even scoped out yet. And as chief people, when is the expected date of completion and move in?
It's not. We've got another year. I think we've got two. So, given where we are, what we're trying to do here on our location, and, you know, other stuff like that. So, we haven't even really settled that we're trying to build it here, but we haven't worked things out with the city yet. So,
you are way ahead of the curve in this change management process, knowing that if it's a completion in 2 years, you're taking this time to. So when we get to that 2 year period, there will be some things you won't expect, but you may have already minimized them to just a few. It sounds like almost a 3 year outlook.
Yeah, because we did start in the middle of last year, so yeah, it's been close to that, and that's we always talk about hope is not a strategy, and that's the expectation. We do know that there's going to be some stuff that we missed, but hopefully through our partners that we choose, places that we've gone to see, and others that have shared with us their journey, who have gone there before us, and again, listening to them, my mind was changed by listening to these two companies that we met with, because I was kind of thinking one direction, and now after listening to them, we're like, you know what, we thought that too, but then this told us take the other option, and I'm thinking that might be the best one, because it, back to your last point, it serves the mission and the vision and the core values.
Core values of the company, and I love the fact that you guys are collaborating with others who are in the industry and looking at best practices and learning from that in order to not go through what they've gone through and try to minimize that day one change impact to create almost a seamless transition, even though you and I both know it's not going to be seamless, but it's to your point of take time, think it out, start early versus when you throw it in late and you're trying to shove something together, that's just going to lead to a lot of other problems. That's going to take a lot longer to smooth out versus getting in front of it.
Yeah, definitely. And that's one of the things that I, as I said in my bio, that, you know, starting out in education, which was a lot of sharing. I love the restaurant industry because, you know, you make friends and you move all over. But when you call up and say, hey, can we come down and, you know, I know it's not necessarily have anything to do with training or HR, but we want to tour your building. Can you hook us up with the right person? We all open up our doors to everybody else. And that's a fun part of our industry.
Yeah, that is pretty cool. It's basically a big family industry, even though we are helping out competition per se, but it's in a much collaborative way. And we all have our, we're all trying to compete for a lot of the same customers. And then again, some of our customers are very different. So, John, thank you so very much for taking time out to have this conversation with me. I know that my audience will take some of these nuggets of wisdom that you've left them and think about how they handle whatever change that they're going through, whether it's to build a new building, to create a new culture, to a point maybe we're merging two companies together and all the change issues that are involved with that. So once again, thank you so very much for your time. I look forward to our next conversation in the near future, my friend.
So do I.
I'd like to thank John again for taking time out of his schedule to give us his thoughts and experiences on dealing with change. In episode 42, I interview Rick Roberts, who's a provider of clean comedy, keynotes, and laughter. Rick has a very successful podcast titled School of Laughs, and after he interviewed me in episode 80, I began my quest to start my own podcast. He is a very funny guy with a lot of wonderful insight to becoming a better presenter. Now, remember, you can subscribe to my podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play. And if you'd like to purchase a personalized signed copy of my book, Improv is No Joke, Using Improvisation to Create Positive Results in Leadership and Life, for $14.99, and the shipping is free, please go to my website, and you'll see the graphic on my homepage. Please allow up to 14 days for shipping. Thank you again for listening, and remember to use all of the principles of improvisation in dealing with change.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.